I know he said first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here's a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit. Here is someone who stood up.
Welcome to everybody, and welcome to this Sunday's edition of U of Trenemy Radio. Today is April 10th, 2011. Man, this year has gone by. This year has just flown by. It's amazing how fast it's gone. We're almost getting to springtime now. I am so looking forward to that. The snow is actually starting to melt up here. A couple of announcements before we get going. I know that we've had them on a couple times on this station, on Fox's show, The Armory with Fox on Saturday. And I had them on here on the 3rd as well. CCOM, Southeast Constitutional Militia. It's basically a training umbrella organization that's trying to help get the militia in the Southeast area coordinated and working with each other on the same page as far as training, tactics, comms, things like that go. If you happen to be in that area, or, you know what, I know guys from Ohio Minutemen Militia that are going down there, and they're way up here at the northern border. So, you know, if you get the chance, take a look at them, get in touch with them, get down there if you can, participate in what they're trying to do. You know, it's like so many things in the past. All these great ideas come, but nobody gets involved, and nobody participates, and they die. They end up sitting there doing nothing. And it's kind of like Committees of Safety. 15 years ago, Gary really tried getting the Committees of Safety going. And you know how, and I know how many of you feel about the Committees of Safety. I mean, this is the best idea that's come out of the Patriot community ever, in my opinion. And 15 years ago, we couldn't get them going. No participation. Over the last couple of years, we've made a lot of headway there. We've at least got people from, you know, the four corners of the U.S. and tons of states in between, talking about the committees, reading about them, trying to get them started. You know, we need that kind of participation going. So, you know, maybe this time around we can get the committees going. Maybe this time around ideas like CCOM will take place. And unlike other organizations that say that are trying to do similar things, you know, CCOM isn't trying to be that regional or national militia group. Anybody that participates remains sole and separate, sole and sovereign under themselves. You don't change your name or anything. They're not trying to be those guys in charge. So, take a look at the website. What is it? CCOM.spruce.com. You can also find the White Owl and Amelia Foxwell on RAM, WellRegulatedAmericanMilitia.com. So with that, we're going to be talking about another incredible idea tonight, one that stemmed from a conversation that myself and another individual were in. And as usual, Gary came up with an incredible idea, and it has to do with dispute resolution as well as so many other things. But again, just like so many other great ideas, we'll go by the wayside. We'll never be heard from again unless we participate. So with that being said, Gary, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Andy and Dave. The idea is just a manifestation of, for those of you who have read The End of the Revolution and Beginning of Independence, it's a manifestation of what they did back then. Western Massachusetts, the courts were taken over by the Crown. Worcester, Massachusetts, for example, kicked the royal courts. They shut down all the courthouses. And we have a record of Worcester, Massachusetts, recognizing a need for courts for criminal matters and later on for dealing with Tories. And so they established a court. They were the civil authority. They revamped their militia, fired everybody or kicked everybody out of the militia, and brought non-Tories back in. They established a court. Now, that court could punish people, fine people, take their guns away, or even have them executed. What we're talking about, though, we're not at that point where we're kicking the courts out yet, because there aren't enough of us that believe the courts should be kicked out like I do. However, in the interim, we do have a problem within our community, and we recognize ourselves as a community, the patriot community, the constitutionalist community. It's a broad community now. A lot of people on the fringes aren't kind of like the idea, like the Tea Party people. But the people that are more serious and more vocal have disputes going constantly. There's one that went by on RAM the other day that was pretty provocative. There have been I'm sure we're all aware of them, and they go back into the 90s. And they amount to a pissing contest. However you try and deal with them, it just becomes name-calling, because nobody's asked to put proof down, put evidence down. There's no organized forum for the dispute to be presented, and then there's no recognized body to come up with a verdict. Basically, anything that's gone on now would end up with each person who observed the proceedings would say, well, I think he won, or I think he won. There's nothing concrete, and there's nothing presented out of it. So, if anything, it just compounds the problem, because now you've got the people that watched the forum, and some have taken one side, and some have taken the other. Well, here's an opportunity for everybody to volunteer, and randomly they'll be drawn into a verdict, and it'll be handled in a very organized, hopefully, manner, where the indictment or the complaint will be submitted to the grand jury. The grand jury then will evaluate the complaint, see if there's enough information there, especially evidence, see if it's broken down into the proper counts for each accusation, and prepare an indictment. And if they do feel it's sufficient to warrant the attention of the court, then the indictment would be sent to the accused. So the accuser puts in the complaint. The grand jury reviews it. If they've got enough to suggest that perhaps something has been going on that would best be dealt with in the court, then they send the indictment to the accused. The accused has two choices. He can answer the indictment and go to court, or ignore it. If he ignores it, the only option the court has then is to take the indictment and the evidence that they have, and post that on the forum, which would not be taking sides, only saying there was an accusation made, and here's the accusation. If he decides to answer it, then the a courtroom will be set up for the trial to proceed, and each side will submit their evidence. It'll be an organized and threaded discussion. It will be closed. It will not be a public trial. The reason that it will not be a public trial is because somebody, the way things work nowadays, somebody will go strip a phrase out that somebody said out of context and go post it all over the internet and say, this is what this guy said. Well, the idea here is to get to the bottom, is what he said true or not? So we can't have people stripping out phrases or portions of the testimony and let that develop a life of its own. So the trial will be closed until it's completed, and then it will be compiled into a presentable format and will be posted under verdicts with the verdict of the jury at the end. Now, what can be the punishment? Nothing. It's going back to the past, they used to put people in stocks, public humiliation, or scarlet letters, or something to indicate that they had done something wrong. And the scarlet letter here is simply to have an adjudication against you or in your favor, depending on which side you were on, posted on the forum so that everybody could see it. Now, the forum will be open. The verdicts will be open to everybody that registers at the forum site. And I just posted the two links for the court as it currently sits at the I'll do it again. Keep scrolling off the screen. The first one is the court itself, is the information about the court and where you can volunteer. The second one is actually the forum that the court will be held in. And we need volunteers, so you don't have to wait until the show is over to go volunteer. If you go to that first link, go to the volunteer page, and you can read what the different positions are that we need to fill. We need jurors, we need grand jurors, we need judges, and we need a clerk, at least one clerk of the court, preferably a clerk of the court and an assistant clerk of the court. They're all your compensation will be our gratitude. If we can get this thing going and it works the way that we hope it will, that we will have a forum to deal with disputes within the Patriot community. Now, people say, well, what's the good of the fact that you're going to have a verdict that says this guy's guilty of trying to create division, he's making false accusations of people, and all that? Now, let's just suppose John Doe has been accused of creating division, calling people names, spreading malicious information, a number of things. Well, John Doe, if he's a patriot and he's just a braggart and a loudmouth and likes to feel important, you know, with the what I call the guess what I know mentality, passing on accusations as if he knows that they're true, he might rethink doing that in the future because he's been chastised once. If not, he'll get chastised again and again and again until he finally realizes that it's not very good for his reputation to continue. The alternative, however, and the more interesting one would be if the guy that was the accused and found guilty goes to his boss and said, I need a reassignment. I've been found out. So now the question arises, who would feel like that? Well, I wrote an article a while back. I don't know how many have read it. It's called Informants Amongst Us. And Randy, you came up with some numbers the other day. Randy?
Yeah, I'm here.
The numbers you came up with the other day about what the government claimed they had agents, infiltrators.
Yes. The DOJ says that they have one in six of the patriots out there are agents. That's what they claim is one in six.
So that's 16%, but that doesn't include informants. Informants are people who are either as with the Viper militia, a volunteer auxiliary fireman joined the Viper militia in Phoenix, and he had a friend that was a cop, and they worked out a deal. Well, he'd actually set the Viper militia up and then testify against them. Then you have the other kind of informants in that article in the link I just posted, where they've been charged with a crime, and the charges just disappear. And they're bound, when you read that article, to turn over information they obtain to the government. So now, when I went to Idaho to go up to Ruby Ridge back in the 90s, I met a number of people up there that suggested that over half of the people in Richard Butler's Aryan Nations Church were informants already. That's the same group that the government wanted Randy Weaver to turn against in his plea bargain. So that 1 in 6 number now starts to appear that we could have anywhere from 10 to 60% of anyone, anywhere, in a militia, in a committee of safety, in a chat room, anywhere that works for the government, anywhere from my estimate, minimally 1 out of 10. I mean, and I think that is low. But we could easily have 50 or 60% of the people in some places that we go that are working on behalf of the government. And perhaps the Committee of Safety Common Law Court can begin putting pressure on those people. There's nothing now, because if you accuse them something, they'll just yell louder back at you that you're worse than they are. So the potential for this court, if it picks up and if we get the volunteers and we get people to file complaints, is, well, pretty exciting, perhaps. But it's up to you to volunteer, just as a judge, a grand juror, or a juror. or the clerk of the court. When we get enough people, we will have the first case is in the works already. It's being prepared, and as soon as the court is ready to deal with it, then we're going to proceed with the first complaint into indictment and into the forum and have our first trial, see if it works.
Well, you know, that's...
Now, Bender, not necessarily. The informants that are there because of a plea agreement aren't getting paid. They don't have to get paid. In fact, they're doing it to keep from going to prison. Go, Randy.
I was going to say, you know, and you know, I just wanted to reiterate that point. Like so many, there's a lot of, you know, there's people in the chat room, Sleepy Salsas, and they're saying, you know, that the Committee of Safety Common Law Court could be one of those ways in which we can help, you know, we could really resolve some of these problems. And I just wanted to go back and reiterate, 15 years ago, you know, when you were trying to get the Committees of Safety going, not much success there. Today we're getting some success. You know, we're at least we're getting a lot of activity on it. We're still waiting for the first ones to openly come out, but hey, we're working on them at least. This is going to be one of those things, you know, unless we get participation going and people involved. You know, look around at the people that are out there that are causing so much disruption, causing so many problems. I mean, even on this coming Monday's show, we might even be talking about an attempted infiltration that happened up in Washington. You know, there's all different kinds of things that this Committee of Safety Common Law Court could be used for. We just, you know, so I would recommend everybody go read a little bit. Yes, read, educate your mind. You know, this is not on YouTube. You know, well, maybe not yet. Sleepy says he's going to try and work on a video for it, but it's not on YouTube yet. So that means you actually have to read here for a little bit. Get involved. Nothing happens without you guys out there. So get involved. Get involved somehow.
Now let's look at Schaefer Cox. 8 people were indicted up there when there were 2 informants. So that means 10 people. So in Schaefer Cox's little circle there, apparently there were 20% informants. We don't know if there are more or not. A lot of times an informant might be charged with a crime, and he'll get off on one reason or another because he's valuable and they want to keep him in there. So understand how big the problem is. Now, we've got to, even at this point in the game, we've got to outthink the enemy. And the enemy is the U.S. government, who has all of, as those that listened in to our Cops Constitutional, they have all the resources in the world. They can throw millions of dollars at prosecuting you, and they can still deny you all the evidence that was recovered at the crime scene. So, though it's a little different, we've got to find ways of being able to stand against the imposition of the Patriot community, such as infiltration by informants or by agents. And let's see, I said it, but there, to the best of my knowledge, there are 3 types of infiltrators. One is the agents that are hired by the government. They're undercover agents. In fact, in the Florida Common Law Court trial, which has nothing to do with this, it was a whole different thing. It was back in 97. I found out that IRS has undercover agents because one of them testified in the trial, and he's the one that I testified against in the same trial. So you have undercover agents that are paid government employees. They'll grow a beard. They'll do whatever they have to. They'll change their lifestyle. They'll do whatever they have to fit into a group. There was a lot of that back in the 60s, even in the biker crowd, the Hells Angels. The next one is the ones like the guy in the Viper Militia, where he just wants to maybe get a promotion in a public service job that he's got by cooperating with the police, getting a good name, or maybe get picked up by the police department out of the fire department because he did such a good job. So he's just a wannabe. And then the other one is the ones charged with the crime, sign a plea agreement, and once they've done that, they've given up some of their integrity. And so the next step is easier, and the next one is even easier. Now, the plea agreement, if you read the article, basically says that the U.S. attorney will be the sole determinant as to whether the information provided by the informant is truthful or not. That means that the U.S. attorney could know it was truthful, but say, that's not truthful, that's not good enough, go and get me more information. to the point that the guy, to stay out of prison, will actually entice you into saying something or doing something or even lie about you just to make sure he doesn't go to prison. Now, as I suggest in the article, if we find these people and they come over to us, we have an obligation, if they've come over to us, to protect them. Committees of safety and militia should protect these people that have been turned into informants by coercive judicial means and allow them to join us and stay in the Patriot community where they want to be and where they belong. Of course, it'd be a long time where you trust them with any sensitive information, but there's no sense in a guy that could be a benefit to our side sending him to prison. He's not going to do us any good there. So if we can bring him over to our side and protect him once he goes against the government, we've got one more man, and every man is valuable if they're on our side. So does anybody have any questions regarding this at this point? Okay, well,
Let me jump in here. If anybody has any questions, our toll-free line, we've been having technical problems, so our toll-free line is down. We're having problems with our broadcasting and our server, so you can't call in on the toll-free line. So if you do want to, if you have questions, you want to jump in here, you can either drop your comments in the chat room, but if you drop them there, the chat is kind of busy, so it might get missed. Best way to do it is to drop your Skype name into the chat room, and we'll bring you on that way.
Or to Randy, or to Dave, or to I, any one of those three forums. If anybody wants to file a complaint with the common law court, if you go to that first link, the court page, it will explain to you what information we need and where it is to be sent. Once it's received, we'll be glad to help you formulate, give you suggestions on how to gather information. But just to give you an idea, that if there are YouTube videos, you'd want to download them, submit them with your complaint. Anything that comes from the Internet should have a URL with it as well, so that there's a reference to it, the date that it was acquired. In most browsers now, within a Paint Shop Pro or a Paint Shop, or on, I know at least on Vista and Windows 7, there's a snipping tool that allows you to click that and grab whatever, just draw the rectangle that you want and capture something from a chat that you want to use as evidence. But always include the URL and the date so that you have can verify when and where it happened. You can have witnesses on your side. You can give a witness list when you file the complaint. You can add to it as time goes on if you find more people. The grand jury, like the grand juries of the past, is willing, unlike the grand juries of today, needs to be willing to do investigation themselves to go look into these things. And to contact people and ask questions that are might have some information pertaining to the place. So we're trying to make it as much like the past as possible, except we're not going to dunk people or burn them at the stake or anything like that. So,
you know, let's take a look at some of these situations, and I mean, let's kind of go through a typical, what a process might be like. Let's say I have a complaint against somebody. Let's say there's somebody out there just bad-mouthing the hell out of me. What do I do?
Well, the first thing is you go to that first URL, and let me post it again real quick. You would go to this link. And there's a link on that page that talks about filing a complaint.
All right, that so page is www.committee.org/C court. So court is one word with an uppercase C for the people that are listening to this later on the archive.
Yes, uppercase C-O-U-R-T, /uppercase C-O-U-R-T. It gives you what you need to submit. Now, you'll be contacted back by the grand jury once it's given to the grand jury. They'll see if there's anything deficient. They might have questions for you. Like I say, they'll investigate it. And they will be actually formulating the indictment based upon the information you submit. I'm going to go to that page and read the list. I knew everything that should be there the other day. That was the other day, though. Now it's today. Okay, to do a complaint, you need the accuser, your name, including any aliases, nicknames used within the past year. So anything you use on the internet so that it can be referenced to you. The webpage URLs, if any, of yours. Email addresses that you've used during the time covered by the complaint. Preferred contact information, email address or phone number, and an address. Then you have to give the information about the accused, the name, real name if known, any aliases or nicknames, web pages and URLs that he's frequent on, email addresses, all that you know of, current email address, the one that he tends to use currently, or other means of notification, phone number if known, address if known. Then you need to have a list of allegations, broken down into specific claims and specific instances or counts, and numbered accordingly. Then you need a list of evidence that identified by count. So if you have evidence, this count one, he called me a son of a bitch. Anything that supports that would be identified as count one. Now, a piece of evidence might apply to two or three different counts, so it can be included in each one. And that's the evidence can be screen captures, where you can get them that I just mentioned using the snipping tool, or most paint programs allow you to, they call it capture. Any URLs, problem with URLs without a capture, they can change the page. Any copies of emails, complete with the headers intact. So the ideal way would be to forward them so the header remains intact in the email. Any statements or affidavits by others as to the allegations. So if you have a friend that was aware of something that happened, he can do an affidavit about it, factually stating what happened. Not his opinion, an affidavit is a statement of facts. Every fact is a different sentence or a different paragraph, but you lay out all the facts and then contact information for that person that is doing the affidavit. And any other evidence supporting the accusation, if you've got anything else, if you've taken pictures on your cell phone or anything else, anything that supports or provides evidence that what you're accusing him of doing has done, you need to provide. Then you need a witness list, including statements from any witness. It doesn't have to be an affidavit necessarily, but we need to know their name, including their aliases, and an email address and a phone number if available. With that information, then the grand jury can prepare the indictment. They'll clean it up into a well-presented format to send on to the accused person. The accused person then has the two choices that I mentioned. He can answer the complaint, or he can ignore the complaint. I think somewhere I said how long we would give him, and I think it was 6 weeks, 30 days. If you count 5 days a week, 30 days to answer the complaint. If he doesn't answer the complaint within that time, then the indictment itself will be posted just like 60 minutes. They refuse to be interviewed for this program. Basically, that's what all we can do at that point. But we don't want to waste your time in doing a complaint if it's not going to have the potential of at least trying to cut down the amount of division or name-calling that's going on in the community. Now, if he does answer the complaint, then he will counter each item of the complaint. If you've got 7 counts on there, he will be required to provide the same information you were asked to provide that proves to the contrary. The whole same list, except their defense instead of accusations, or answers instead of accusations. Once that's received, then a jury will be selected, and the jury will be composed of 12 people. the accuser will pick one person of his choice to be on the jury, not necessarily out of the jury pool. The accused will be able to pick one person to sit on the jury, not necessarily out of the jury pool, and then 10 will be pulled out of the jury pool, so we have a jury of 12. Now, initially in the first write-up on this, I said six or eight, I think eight in the jury, six out of the pool, and each person gets to pick one. If we have to, if we don't have enough volunteers, we may proceed that way. If it looks like we'll have the volunteers, we have to wait a little, and we're only a few short of getting the 12, we'll go with the traditional 12. Now, the reason each side, since it's not a public trial, the reason each side is going to be able to pick a juror is this. At least to them, it's public. They'll know what's going on in the jury. They have a friend on the jury. The friend can try and sway people. Now, we're not looking. This is not criminal, so you don't need unanimity in the jury to come back with a guilty verdict. It's more like a civil matter where the preponderance of evidence, and in this case, we're going with the majority of the jury. Now, we've got 12 people. If it's a split jury, six and six, then it'll be presented that way and possibly just put up on the trial without a verdict. If we get seven on one side, then the verdict will fall on that side, and then the verdict will be presented with the case as well. Now, if it's a tie, anything the jury does will not be included in the verdict section. If it's not a tie, then the case will be cleaned up. Anything that's not really relevant to the case that might have been posted in the forum during the course of the trial, and the trial will be held in the forum, and those who only those that are authorized will have access. When it's done, though, it will be brought out into the public realm to be viewed by any registered user. At that point, you know, that's done. The trial's done. The court is done. They've washed their hands of the matter. They've done the best that they can. But at least in this sense, the pissing contest is over. He who pissed the most will win. So it doesn't continue. And that, hopefully, that particular argument, that particular accusation will be removed completely and forever from the realm of the internet aspect of the Patriot community. There is a provision for appeal, because if you can't find a witness, then it would take, the judges could meet and determine if all of a sudden new evidence came up that would raise question as to the verdict of the jury. The judges could call for a retrial, or if it was absolute and unquestionable, they could even amend the verdict at that point. This is a concession because limited time, limited experience, limited resources, sometimes difficulty in finding somebody that can clarify the whole thing. There has to be some provision of fairness if there's an indication that the verdict may have been in error because information wasn't available at the time. So we're doing everything we can in setting this up to make it as fair as possible to both parties, as long as the accused responds to the initial complaint. If he doesn't, it stays one-sided. It goes public. He chose not to answer, which means not that he didn't want to get in a pissing contest. Actually, it means he wants to continue the pissing contest by refusing to answer and getting in a forum where a good presentation will solve whether the what the true nature of the circumstances is. So that's that.
Yeah, let's go back, if you don't mind for a minute, let's go back into the jury aspect and the judge and all those other ones. Now, you had brought this up momentarily, but I wanted to dig into this a little bit. Let's say I have a complaint against somebody. Let's say I got a complaint against you, Gary.
Okay.
And I make a complaint against you, and then next thing I know, I notice that your wife is now on the jury board.
Okay, there's a provision for recusal of judges and jurors. Not for the grand jurors, because they're simply formulating and determine that there's enough information to go to court. But the judges and the jurors can be recused. if you find my wife is on there, unless she's the one that I picked. Remember, each of the parties gets to pick one juror of his choice. So if she was pulled out of the pool, I can demand recusal, but I can't demand recusal of your witness, your juror, nor can you demand recusal of mine. The other 10 are subject to recusal, as are all the judges. The judge's name, once the trial begins or prior to the trial, when the trial is being set up, will be given to both parties. They can say, well, that son of a bitch, he doesn't like me. He's as bad as that guy that accused me of these crimes, so I want him to recuse himself. Now, a judge, hopefully, or a juror that doesn't feel that they can be fair, if they were embroiled in the dispute, can recuse themselves voluntarily as well. There is no limit on recusals. Unfortunately, that might get us down to watering down the pool to too few people. And if that did happen, you know, if the accused person kept saying, well, you know, he's going to have to give some reason for it, but if he keeps wasting the jury pool and all of a sudden out of 30 potential jurors, we have three left and we can't hold the trial, I guess the only recourse at that point is go back as if he never answered, because he's using divisive means to be able to answer. And so the indictment would be posted without adjudication by the court. I don't know how else to do that. If anybody's got an idea that will serve to provide a fairer application of this whole system, I tried, when I thought it out and wrote it up, I tried to be as fair as I could, trying to think from each side what could be the most fair. And that's one that I hadn't thought of. I offered the recusals. It just occurred to me that what if he recuses everybody? Then we got a problem. So you're not going to be tried by people you believe to be on the other side. And that applies to both sides, really. I guess if the accuser recused everybody, that we would not post the indictment because he made the accusation and filed the complaint, and then he refused to let it to go to court. So I guess in that case, the indictment would not be, go public, because he's the one that used divisive means to avoid the trial itself. Thanks for the question, Randy. You just filled in some blank spots.
All right, hang on a second. We've got Wolfpack. He wants to come in, and he's got a question or so. So let me bring him on. This might take just a moment here. All right, we should be bringing him on now. Hello, Wolfpack.
Hey, what's up, boss man?
Hey, how you doing? How's the day treating you?
Better than some, worse than others. I'm a little stressed out, I'll admit it.
Yeah, you know, harness that stress. Harness that stress, then turn it into productive energy. You wanted to come on, though. You got a question. You got comments. What do you got?
A variety of questions. Obviously, I've got a couple of my guys in here, and we intend on getting involved with this program in Illinois, and just wanted to maybe consult you guys on some more direction to get this ball rolling. As you both know, I'm kind of trying to combine some efforts through a bunch of different groups that I'm involved in that are all venturing towards the same path, as far as maybe cleaning up some of the mess or just playing, getting America out of this downward spiral that it's on.
Okay.
Yep.
There are a few more people, guys, that are actually in this room that happen to be involved with another person's program. They consider themselves the Restored Republics. And I'm not trying to promote their group. What I am trying to do, though, is maybe via your guys' combined opinion, if you could possibly re-explain what maybe has already been explained to me as far as the viability for a group such as this that supposedly has, you know, in your eyes, maybe elected themselves to be appointed officials, yet we both agreed that it really it's important that a civil body politic is in place first, so that they can vote and lay that foundation that we're looking for to kind of reform a common law form of government, which should be the original form.
Well,
how would you re-explain it to someone from the Republic?
Well, this, if somebody from the Republic wanted to bring charges or was charged by this court, it's totally independent of the Republic. Now, yours and my conversation the other day has to do with committees of safety, more so than the common law court, because the common law court at this point is unique and singular. Now, you were talking about Illinois. You know, if Illinois ever got big enough with committees of safety, then they could take this same model down to a state level. Right now we're looking at this as a national level, but it's not something that's going to be organized by others, because it's being organized by the people that are organizing it now, this committee of safety. I don't want to say organization, because it's not. I mean, the people that come in as volunteers are doing so because they want to volunteer. The people that want to make accusations will come in because they're volunteering, and the one that's accused will come in because they're volunteering. And interestingly, back in the 90s, there were a number of common law courts. I mentioned one a little while ago. One thing that they assumed that they had was the authority to bring anybody in court. Now, I talked to some attorneys, some judges, and some patriots that had been studying common law court, and one thing they recognized is, and I'm going to use Judge Wapner with the first television court, if people voluntarily enter a court, it's no different than voluntarily entering arbitration. Once you agree to that method, it becomes the method of agreement to settle a dispute, and that's basically what we're setting up here. It's just being operated under this single head, so it can't really serve dealing with the other issue unless it's a dispute between that organization and somebody else, or another organization and that organization, or something like that. Does that
I understand that. I'm noticing that, you know, I plan on going to a lot of different events around Illinois in the near future and passing out your information. Are there any other, I mean, this is all breaking groundwork, grassroots movement work right now, pretty much. Are there any recommendations that you could suggest to get the word out to as many people as humanly possible that are at least somewhat awake enough to realize that there's a problem and to do something about it?
Well, you mean as far as committees of safety or as far as this court?
All the above.
I sent you on Dropbox that zip file this morning.
Yes, sir.
You got it. Okay, now you could take the information I put out on the court and pass that out along with it if you'd like. I mean, there's no reason not to exclude it. We did not include it because, quite frankly, I just finished the webpage up last night, and the zip file was prepared before then. But I'd appreciate you getting the information out. I'll drop you some boxes, some docs tonight that explain the court, okay? Or at least one document that explains the court.
Sir, as much knowledge as you can drop on me, I will absorb as quickly as humanly possible and share it with others.
Well, I think if it was all the knowledge, I probably don't have any. I'm just stealing from the past. But
fair
I will
enough.
Pass on whatever I think is would be helpful. You know, if any time you're anywhere and somebody has a question, Brian, feel free to call me.
Fair enough. I'll do that.
And
absolutely.
I'll be glad to call and answer any questions people have. You know, I'm working on a number of articles right now. I've got some list here that's about 11, 12 articles long. Some of them are expansions on the Committee of Safety. Some are in more detail on the common law court. But I'm not getting to them because the 14th Amendment article and the final version of the plan right now are paramount, and I'm doing as little as possible until those are done. But
fair
I'm
enough,
always available.
And I appreciate that, and I'll definitely try to keep it within regular hours. I'm quite a night owl. And
well, I'm Pacific time, and I'm up by 7 o'clock every morning, and I go to bed about 11. If it's outside of those times, either leave me a message on Skype or send me an email, and I'll get with you as soon as I get out here to my office and my computer.
Sure. Just ever since shit hit the fan training, I've been basically staggering my sleep, and altering it just in case I ever get put on watch for 12 hours. You know, I'll know how to handle it. Others will just fall asleep there into a fit of narcolepsy. But, and I'm sure Randy can verify that I kept him up till, what, 5 in the morning just the other day. So I apologize for that. I'll keep it within regular hours. But you bet, we'll keep sharing information, sir.
Well, I've got a very gracious wife, and I want to keep it that way. So I've...
My wife came out yesterday morning at 11 in the morning and drugged me to bed, so...
Did you get any sleep?
5 hours.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I was busy. I was talking. You know, people want to hear about committees, so I talk about committees when they want. But yeah, don't worry.
Wolfpack, you guys got any specific questions about the court? You going to volunteer? You going to file some complaints? What are your feelings about it so far?
Well, considering my palate and some of the positions that you're aware I hold, I'd rather leave out of the room right now, but. With everything combined, I think that would put me in a perfect situation to move forward also with your program, considering they all are hand-in-hand, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a lot about networking and getting people together and the same page and realizing the commonalities and disappointments that we all have combined are pretty much all tied to the same source. And if all those separate groups, no matter what their backgrounds are, really put their heads together, I mean, I just said the other night, two heads are better than one, but, you know, 150 million are a lot better. And, you know, putting all that together, yes, I want to move forward. And I'm just curious, in that position of trying to get things started, you know, outside of sharing information, I'm assuming there'll need to be some sort of council formed here in the very near future.
Well, the committees of safety councils will be formed on a, if you've read the plan, they'll be formed on a local level, and they'll join as, say you had three cities and a county in Illinois, and they all had committees of safety. Well, they're in a position now to create a county committee of safety. There might be some counties where the city is enough to make a county committee of safety. When you got two or three counties in the committee of safety, then they'll create a higher level. It grows up. It doesn't grow down. The founding fathers built this country by growing from the bottom up. It's not grassroots. Because that's misleading. Grassroots is where you yell and carry signs and say, we want this. We want controls on the budget, and they don't do it anyway. True grassroots, though, is everything. The entire foundation is built from the bottom up. And so to have a national council or even a state council at this point, or a constitutional convention, as they had a couple of years ago, is not consistent with the instructions the founders gave us. Now, the committees of safety are the council. They were called councils of safety in some cases, but basically they become the executive body over the group of the people who are members of the association of which they're in charge of at the city, the county, or the state level.
Hey, Garrett, if you don't mind, I'm aware that, you know, you are obviously, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, you're in the 7, 8, 9, you know, you're definitely well-versed in this. And I think it might be important to take a step back and kind of think about the people that are just getting introduced to this idea. and I think I need to ask, like, in layman's terms, just trying to keep it real, you know what I mean? Like, all right, starting off, essentially the committees of safety going back in time is a bunch of pissed off people that weren't happy with the tyranny going on in the country right then, right?
Just like now, yes.
And that's an obvious commonality amongst many of us in the country right now. So say, hypothetically, you're in a position to where you want to start forming this. You're not sure of other people that are aware of it. You have the capability to get other people aware of it, but the very first steps, you would say, like, for example, I've got more or less 10 guys in my in three surrounding counties, and most likely more. I'm going to keep it liberal and say 10 guys, and let's say half of them are from my county. We could actually start that with, let's say, only 10 guys in this county.
You could start it with
yes.
You can start
yes, and every, now, the association, understand this. Now, You have volumes 1 and 2 of Committees of Safety, these books we wrote back in the 90s. Now, I've learned a lot since then. So I'm going to give a brief explanation of how it works. Let's take a town in western Massachusetts back then. Say there were 30 families. Say 5 or 6 of the males in the family, because of the structure, the social structure back then, decided that they were going to form a committee of safety. They would form that committee of safety. They wouldn't have much effect on the Tories, the people that didn't want to participate in the committee of safety, but they and their families constitute the entire association. Now, if they elected 4 people to be the committee of safety, or whatever number they chose to be the committee of safety, then that's the executive that's over all these people who have voluntarily entered this social group called the association, or this political, it's not really political, but this civil authority called the association. So the wives and children are part of the association as well. But the committee of safety itself is those that are elected as the executive. You could call it, you have a chairman of the committee of safety, but the committee of safety replaces the governor. It replaces the president. It replaces the mayor with a committee as opposed to an individual. Now, I realize that committees are cumbersome things, but that's what they used. And with all that cumbersomeness, they managed to achieve the goal. And so with all the criticism of rule by committee, it seems logical that that's the way to do it. And so, yes, you can become a committee of safety. Now, you need to go out and try and get your neighbors, educate them, and bring them into the committee, because when you become a majority in that county, somewhere down the road, or an effective number at least, you are at least able to take care of yourselves. Now, in that introduction to the Committee of Safety that was in that package, is document number 1, it talks about Katrina. Say you had a 10-square-block area of Katrina that had a committee of safety in New Orleans. And they formed a committee of safety, and they had, even at that late date, said, okay, we're going to form a militia. Who wants to volunteer to be the militia for this committee of safety? Now, once they've got the militia, then they send a message to the local police department saying, look, this 10-square-block area is ours. We have a committee of safety. We have a militia. You needn't waste your manpower patrolling our area. We will do it ourselves. The police should be relieved to have that burden taken off of them, because then they can distribute their manpower elsewhere. But if they don't, your comment's still the same. We'll protect our own neighborhood against the police if necessary. I mean, that's what you're capable of doing at that point, as long as everybody agrees, or the majority agree within that area. Now, you won't have that majority in your case for some time, but pretty soon the Tea Party people are going to be looking for an alternative to the Tea Parties, because they found out the Tea Parties work as well as a flimsy sign and a flimsy stick. And so the Tea Party people might be interested in joining committees of safety.
Yeah, those are the events that I'll be going to do some converting. I have a secondary related question for you, sir, that just popped in my head. Obviously, a large base of the listeners that you usually have on this channel are related to their unorganized lowercase militias in their state.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, because, you know, I'm highly involved on that level within Illinois. My next question is, just to form the Committee of Safety, and let's say, for example, considering what I'm trying to do, is if I were a interim, I hate using the word interim around here, using that word temporarily, am I a conflict of interest, because I'm also on the executive administration team for the local militia, which is the lowercase militia, not organized, but what if that civil body politic needed their assistance? I can't wear both hats, can I?
Well, I can only find one instance, I think it was in South Carolina, where the commander of the militia in South Carolina insisted that he be on the state committee of safety. In any other case, militia members were not allowed on the committee of safety. They are can be part of the association. In fact, by being in the militia, they are automatically within the association because they're a participant in the protection of this association. Now, if you have a militia committee, you could serve on that because the civil authority is still the committee of safety, the four out of the 30 families that I mentioned. That's the executive. You cannot serve on the executive. You can be a member of the association. The Committee of Safety can cast the vote out to all the members of the association if they want, and you could vote even though you were the commander of the militia.
Fair enough.
But you can't serve on the Committee of Safety as the executive branch.
Right.
You can be on a subcommittee.
Right.
I'm
as
sorry,
a
go.
Civil body politic, it would be a conflict of interest for me to be on that board because I would be implementing, let's say, the more unorganized group out here as well. Therefore, I can't really put myself in power. That would be weird. But
it would be a conflict, yes.
Yes, but as a representative starting out to get it on board, the least I could do is at least get the word out so people can form that politic. I'm in sense actually trying to create who my eventual handlers would be, correct?
I'll give you a good example. Now, it wasn't for the same reason, but when we set up the Central Florida Committee of Safety, everybody said, Gary, you're going to be the first chairman of the Committee of Safety. I said, no, I'm not. I'm not even staying here in Central Florida. I've got to go back out. People want to know more about Waco. So I wasn't even going to be there, but I got 300 people into the meeting. We got the committee formed, and then we got kicked out of the library, so we ended up having an election on the sidewalk and elected the chairman of the Committee of Safety. Then the Committee of Safety, the small group, the 13 people in that case, that was the Committee of Safety, did, at my request, bring me on as the press liaison for the Committee of Safety because I was dealing with the press, and they felt that it would be beneficial with my knowledge and everything. So I served as an advisor to the Committee of Safety, but I didn't have a vote. I didn't want to vote. Now, if you want to be an advisor to them and don't have the vote, you're not in a position to vote yes or no on what you're going to do as the militia. So you can participate in some form at arm's distance and still sit with the Committee of Safety and act in an advisory capacity as you learn these things. But if you're like me, then you want to pass that off as soon as you can just to, you know, there's more things to do in life. And if you're interested in the militia, but you want the Committee of Safety, once it's, has its, momentum, then you're free to walk away. At first, if you exclude yourself from voting, I think that you satisfy it because we're trying to relearn something from history that is farther away in our history than it was to them then. So the idea of Committee of Safety, the idea that you can set up this interim government or this parallel government, to fill in the voids where government fails, it has been lost from our history for over 100 years. So whatever it takes to get it going, if you abstain from voting, I think that you're not creating, this is my opinion, and I will argue for you if somebody ever charges you with a conflict, that by not voting, you have not put yourself as the military over the civil. You're there strictly in an advisory capacity. You're making recommendations to them, but you're not voting.
Fair enough. So in essence, it would be a good, let's say, pickup line for those, let's say, at these future tea parties, all hypothetically, of course, that if I were to said something like, you know, I need to appoint you so you can appoint me so I can be the guy handing in illegitimate president the subpoena to take him to a common law court to prove his legitimacy.
Well, let's put it this way. I acted as chairman until we had the election, and then I walked away from it. Because until the Committee of Safety is formed, that executive body, there is no civil authority. So you can, all the participation you want until you've got enough people to sit down and, okay, let's select the Committee of Safety and then select our officers. And at that point, once that's done, once you have officers, the chairman of the Committee of Safety, the treasurer, any officers you feel necessary, once that moment in time, the Committee of Safety comes into existence. And at that moment, then, you're back as an advisor. You're not voting. You're not sitting in an official capacity. Any participation of yours is advisory. But until that point, there is no committee of safety, so you're not violating the concept of civil militia being subordinate to the civil authority, right?
Understand.
Did I make that clear enough?
Yeah, it actually did. Randy and I had this conversation the other day. Hey, Randy, you still there?
I'm still here. I was just letting you and Gary go.
You can always tell Randy's here. You hear the keyboard in the background.
I'm educating people in the chat room as you guys are going along as well. So,
well, on top of that, Randy, there's like, and I'm scaring other people when I say this, and I just kind of would like to re-verify it through you due to our other conversations. When it comes to the lowercase, unorganized militias in most states.
Lowercase. You keep saying that lowercase. You know, if you look at what lowercase militia is, that is an individual person.
And everybody 18 to 45 is a lowercase militia. Once it comes together as an what the statutes call unorganized militia, the well-regulated militia, then it becomes an uppercase militia. If you have a committee of safety and you have a subordinate militia, then it's an uppercase militia.
Can you say that again for those of us that
okay, you are for the last 30? The plural of militia is militia to begin with, okay? Now, your militia, lowercase m right now, if you've got 10 guys there that act as a militia, then that's an uppercase militia because it's a body of militia coming together as a militia. Once you're an I'm going to say organized, they've bastardized the word by making that unorganized militia. In fact, let's say you're a well-regulated militia at that point. 10 of you train together. You've worked out all the details. You're ready to defend our country against Indians or anything else that crops up and become a problem.
Take it easy on the Indians, right?
Well, that's what the original committees did, so I use that analogy. I can't say the FBI, can I? No, I won't. So substitute Indians for FBI. The Indians attack you, and you're organized and prepared to defend yourself. You are an uppercase militia at that point. Once you're well-regulated, which is organized and accoutred, they called it then, or equipped, we call it now. So once you're practicing together and functional and equipped, you are basically a militia with an uppercase M. It's a proper noun at that point because it's collective. It includes...
But I guess the big question is, where I was kind of going at this with our friend Randy here is, and hopefully you're still listening, Randy. Does that make you a legal lawful militia?
A lawful militia is somebody is an organization is a militia that has been organized and created under the constitutional guidelines, which means that it must be subordinate and recognized by a civil authority. That's what the constitutional militia is.
So are you really saying that most likely no militias are really true until they're recognized by that civil body politic, which most likely is this route, the committees of safety?
Exactly.
Okay, I just wanted to hear it again. I thought that you guys are recording this, right?
Oh yeah, this is all of our shows are all of our shows are available for download about 20 minutes after the show ends.
I think it's important that many people hear this. I can't look at the room because I'm on the phone with you right now. I didn't want to echo out. Is Major Cross still in the chat room?
Yes, he is.
Major Cross, I told you I'd try to find an answer, sir. Feel free to call in on the show. I'd like to hear your opinions about what we just said.
Now, you get into a touchy area with what you just discussed. So a lot of people have asked me, and my firm belief is, under the circumstances, I'm going to use Indians instead of FBI again so I don't get in trouble. The Indians are forming about 3 miles from here, and we expect that we're going to be attacked. And we didn't have a committee of safety, and we didn't have a militia. So we're forming a militia now because the need arises. But at the same time, we are pursuing creating a committee of safety so that there is a civil authority to tell us and direct us, to be the authority over us, to defend us against the Indians. Now, look at the basic concept of militia. The right to self-defense is the most important right that we have. Because without our lives, none of the other rights mean shit, right?
Exactly.
So the right of self-defense is there. The inherent right of militia in the Constitution is the right of self-defense. So we have a right to put together to defend ourselves. But if we want to be a well-regulated militia, we have to come under the authority of that civil body. So to be a properly formed militia, you have to have that. If you're pursuing getting that civil authority there because the governor's washed his hands of you, which is what exactly what happened 230 years ago, then you're pursuing it. And I think that, you know, can't be half pregnant. So you're pregnant at that point. You're pursuing getting the job done. You're... can probably properly call yourself a militia. Now, if you abandon the idea of committee of safety, you've gone back to, I hate to use the word, but I think bottom line, we all understand this. You become a warlord with his militia below him, like the ones in Libya and Egypt and all these other places now. There's nothing different than that unless you subordinate to civil authority. But as long as you're in pursuit of properly doing it within the guidelines of the Constitution, I think that you're doing it right.
You know, in fact, I'd like to bring this up. We did. There's an archive. In fact, it's the second Committee of Safety show that we did. I'll post a link for it here shortly. But Gary and I, this was the second show that we did on the Committee of Safety, and in that second audio, we went through and we used the Arizona Citizen Militia as our basis. And we used the border as the situation, and we went into this in great detail, in fact. You know, going into the fact that there are no committees of safety, the government is not recognizing the militia, so what do? So, yes, Gary brought up an excellent point there. You know, it comes down to the point of natural law, though, at that point. You have a need for self-defense. You know, the barbarians are at the gate. What are you going to do? Do you sit around and wait for a committee of safety to form, or do you defend? You defend.
Damn sure aren't going to wait for the government to come and protect you.
Hell no.
Especially if it's the Indians. Especially if it's those Indians attacking, the ones that start with F.
I got that. Which one of you guys grabbed that JPEG I just sent you?
I grabbed it. I didn't know. Yeah, I guess that was from you. Who is that for? I guess anybody can get it, can't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody in there. I just wanted you guys
that
to
chat, in that chat, yeah.
Yeah, that's my teepee.
I haven't opened it yet.
Okay.
But when I say Indians, I allude to historically, the committees of safety came back into existence in the frontier towns where there was an absence of... the colonial support against the Indians. In some places they set up forts, in others they didn't. And so where they didn't, the people in that community had no choice but to form their own. Now, a lot of times the government would assist them. They might send them muskets, ball, and powder. They might even send a team in there to build a fort that they could take refuge in. But I'm reading about the French and Indian Wars right now, and I'm learning even more about how this was working out in Pennsylvania, Western Virginia, way Western Virginia, over the Appalachian Mountains, the Ohio Valley area now, that the people that didn't want to leave, and if they had enough people in a community, would actually build their own fort, a stockade, and if there was any alarm over Indians, they'd send scouts out, and if there was any indication the Indians were in the area, then they would all go to the stockade, bring all their livestock and everything, because the Indians would kill the livestock. So they were setting up that defense absent the ability of government. Now, whether they had committees of safety, they haven't addressed, because they're talking about the violence that was going on. So my next step will be to go a little further and see if I can find out if they were actually forming committees of safety and abided by that civil authority or not under those circumstances. But at this point, out during the French and Indian Wars, I can't find any reference to the committees of safety. so far.
Another question I wanted to ask you regarding the committees is, obviously, the problem that we face again today is that there's obviously tyrants in charge. I'm under the belief that when governments were formed, there was a point in time where governments more or less turned into corporations. And around that time is pretty much when other things fell into place where we lost a lot of our own individual, state, and national sovereignty rights. Now, starting from the committees of safety again, there's going to be times where they're going to want to acquire funds, for example. And then you kind of get pulled into the same realms when you're working with finances, as far as, for example, would we need to get a C3 status? And if so, who's in charge of the C3 status? And if they're in charge of the C3
status...
Stop
right there. Stop right there. You mean you're sitting in government to fill voids where the government is not providing for you, and then you're going to go to that government and ask them permission?
A lot of sheeple would believe that would be the route to go, sir.
My feeling is quite simple. If we have a poker game, we throw money on the table, and whoever wins, nobody reports that. You have a committee of safety, and it's, what we in South Bend, what they did is they collected a dollar every meeting, if you could afford a dollar. And nobody did any accounting to the government. Fuck the government. They're not doing any protecting us. They're not taking care of us. So you just collect the money, and you're accountable to yourselves for that money.
.com. You have now, if
I were going to say we were going to, there was a farmer's market 30 miles away, and we all decided we want to buy some vegetables from that farmer's market, or you're on a construction site and there's somebody's going to go down to the restaurant and get lunch. You throw your money in the kitty, you write down what you want, and the guy runs down, or the beer runs down and gets it. Do you do any accounting to the government? Do you ask their permission to pool your money to buy what you guys need? Why is it any different? Why should we be beholden to government? Why should we ask their permission to exist? Because once you do, the IRS can come in and audit you. The IRS can take away your 501c3 status. You have subjected yourself to the civil tyrannical government in Washington.
On that same note, man, and I'm not trying to play devil's advocate, but we use these paper, worthless, non-backed Federal Reserve notes in order to acquire and barter in exchange for goods and services. For example, paperwork, gasoline, food, time. How would, like, I want to be able to get out and get this word out. For now, until it's formed, we can use that method until it's formed. At that point,
You're breaking up.
Can you hear me now?
You're good.
Yeah.
I was saying, right here, basically, we're using, unregulated Federal Reserve notes, which are not really money in the first place. Once the committees are formed, let's say for Illinois, for example, should we stop using FRNs as well? Because those are little baby adhesion contracts as well, aren't they?
Well, I don't want to get into adhesion context. Two of the articles I'm working on right now, one I mentioned, the 14th Amendment article, which I hope to have finished next week. The other one is going to be on corporations, and I think it'll dispel your belief in the United States became a corporation. I think I can document that it's not. That's a monster somebody created because they didn't understand what really happened. However, for you to collect money, to do things for yourself, if you can use FRNs now, you can use silver, you can use whatever you want by agreement. You can use monopoly money if you want. You can use packs of cigarettes and individual cigarettes for change. You can barter any way you want. If you want to barter with FRNs, barter with FRNs. More than likely, if you want to buy something from an established business somewhere, though, he's not going to accept cigarettes or chickens or something like that, so you're going to have to deal with FRNs because that's the only, the federal government has an obligation, and it makes very clear in that obligation that only gold and silver will be used for payment of debt. Now, if I buy something from you, you give it to me, at that point I have a debt to you. I have to pay you. So the government's abrogated their responsibility. So can you use anything you want? Yes. Can you call it a U.S. dollar? No, because that's the purview of the government, again, under the Constitution, to coin the money of the realm. But for you to barter in a silver blank, whatever it says, as long as it doesn't counterfeit the currency, say U.S. dollar on it, you can use it. 1 ounce fine silver, 99% pure, whatever, however you want to, chicken eggs, whatever you want, you can barter with. There's no law against barter in this country yet, or I have yet to see one. But whether you use FRNs or not, you're going to find that you have to if you're going to go down to the local hardware store and buy some bullets.
Or Randy, gun store. Randy, can you take note to a website right now for full usage of barter exchange for goods? It's actually a silver network that already exists. It's the American Open Currency Standard. It's or the AOCS, American Open Currency Standard. If you could, in the future, both of you guys, if you want to take a look at that, they've pretty much been laying down the law right there when it comes to barter silver, and they've got a network that exists, and they're trying to get it down to mom-and-pop shops and retails and taking it away from the arches and the big W's.
Well, that's something. I'll tell you, that's something that has been tried for over 20 years in this country, and it's really hard to set up a network. The best place to do it is if you had three counties adjacent to each other in a corner of Illinois, and you got the local merchants to accept them as well as FRNs, and grew it outward rather than trying to set up a national one. The problem with the national one is you're too thin. And I think that's why all these efforts, let's see, back in the 90s, they called them silver rounds. But they were minted and, well done and everything, and they were guaranteeing them. But to get people to recognize them, if you go in with a silver dollar and flop it on the counter at Walmart right now, and what you're buying costs 50 cents, they'll give you 50 cents in sandwich back. Now, that just cost you $39.50. So, you know, to getting people to accept dollars, and I have met people over the years. I've accepted gold for survey work 30 years ago based on the current value versus what my invoice was. You will find people now that will gladly. All you got to do is go into a small store. You can't go into a corporate store like Walmart, but go into a local hardware store and say, I need that shovel. How much is it? $20. Well, would you accept a half dollar silver, a half ounce of silver? And the guy says yes, then you pay him a half ounce of silver. If that gets popular in an area, it gets popular.
Sir, if you click that website I mentioned to you and click Marketplace, there should be a listing of over 30,000 businesses that are willing to do this.
Well, I'll look at that when I have a chance. We're doing the show now, so I'd rather not.
Yeah, I understand, but for the future, I mean, when I want this to get implemented. It's my goal to get it implemented. When it's implemented, we need to realize that, you know, these other structures still do exist, and we should consider utilizing them, but that's fine. So far, my next question was, on the national level, like when it comes to, for example, the militias, unorganized militias, once they go beyond boundaries of each republic, do you foresee any issues as far as, let's say, I've got a lot of friends in Pennsylvania, perhaps.
Have you read the plan yet?
I'm sorry?
Have you read the plan yet? I think I sent it to you, didn't I? The plan for restoration of constitutional government?
In the Dropbox?
No, I think I sent you the URL for it the other day when we were talking.
Oh, I thought we kind of agreed they'd end up in the Dropbox, but I can retract that and grab it.
No, I'll put it in the Dropbox then.
Yes, sir.
When you read that, it'll answer that question. But again, it's growing from the bottom up. When you get to the point that you make enough contact within your state, you establish a state militia. Now, at that point, remember the Constitution created a union of states, right? A confederation of sorts. Okay, Washington took 13 colonies and ask for requisitions. How that's structured, I can't say now, but when three states get together, for example, just say California, Nevada, and Arizona were taken over by committees of safety under the plan, and they've formed a Southwest Region Army, for example. They can work together if they all choose to. If they want to put it under a single command and retain their own state armies as well, because in the plan, when you get to a certain point, you make it a state function, and once you establish the state committee, you've got the state function. So I can't say what's going to be the best thing under the circumstances. I've tried to give some guidelines more for thought than anything. It will have to be adapted to the circumstances as they exist. But they don't exist until you're in contact physically with these other people. And as your white area grows, you get more contact, whatever they decide to do. And eventually, you will basically have something under the control of the Committee of Safety of the United States. But whether it wants to make a United States Army to continue fighting the battle in the outpockets that haven't come into compliance yet or not is up to them. It can go either way. That's not my decision to make that decision. In fact, I'm trying to not make any decisions in the plan except to give a guideline. It's a plan. It's not a hard and fast. It's not a constitution. It's not a set of rules. It's to give people ideas on how they can grow from these small white dots into larger white dots. Then the white dots merge, and eventually the whole country will be white again. So, is it constitutional? I would think so, that under an emergency, at least, the Committee of Safety, if you had a United States Committee of Safety, could decide any means they wanted to assure that they had continuity between the military forces. They can't deny the states the right to protect themselves and deal with any problems they have within the states, but to try and get the other states to participate in expanding the authority of the Committee of the United States, Committee of Safety of the United States, or United States Committee of Safety, is what they decide collectively, just like they did under the Articles of Confederation. And they'll have that much authority as far as collecting taxes as well. So, those problems will be dealt with based on what's available. FRNs might go by the wayside. It might be the Federal Reserve takes all their FRNs in thinking they can shut us down. And then we'll be forced, and it'll be nice to have a network like you're talking about available to us. As long as I can buy the silver with FRNs. But I've got to wonder about somebody who sets up a national organization and says, give me your FRNs and I'll give you silver. Sounds like he's playing the market right now. But I'll look at that link when I get a chance.
Fair enough. Yeah, you've answered a lot of my questions. I'm sure more will pop up. I guess I'm going to go ahead and back out. Major Cross, you're still online, sir. I'm sure there's a few important things that you wanted to add to this issue. I'd love to hear what you have to say. If you could go ahead and feel free to call in or jump in on Skype. But I'll follow up with you guys later. You both know where to find me. And for the rest of you, thanks for tuning in on such short notice.
Yeah, no problem. Well, in fact, thanks a lot. You had some good questions there, and I appreciate your energy there as well. Thanks for getting the word out and bringing other people in. And I want to bring that up here. I want to take a break from all that for a minute. Wolfpack and many, and you, a lot of you do the same thing. Wolfpack and I brought in a bunch of people. Cross and then me bring in a bunch of people. I don't market the show anymore. I'm kind of leaving that up to you guys. And I figure that if you guys think that what we're trying to do here is, that our ideas are valid and that this is this is what the founders intended for us, and you think that our ideas work, let other people know. It's only when more and more and more of us are thinking along these same lines that this is actually going to happen. It's not going to happen until then. So, get the word out there. Spread it around. Share share it with people. Feel free to do whatever you want with my archives. If you get my emails, forward them on to other people that you think would be interested in knowing about this. It's like everything else, participation and bringing other people in. So,
if you build it, they will come.
Exactly. So, did you have anything else you wanted to go over with this, Wolfpack, or anything?
I think you guys pretty much covered. More will come up. I mean, he answered my direct questions now, so you guys are right on top of your game as always, man. And I look forward to definitely working with you here in the Midwest, or from the Midwest, on this project. If anything falls through, or if you don't hear from me, or 48 hours goes by and I'm not poking my nose around, I just hope that I know you guys have my real first and last name, that someone out there can, if I happen to go, let's say, the same route as Mr. Cox in Alaska, which I won't, but if it's in the similar groups that have taken him against his will, I just hope that you guys would kind of try to look out for me a little bit, and once things are formed, just remember I'm still back there somewhere. You know what I mean?
Well, like, one thing that has to be considered, and this is something I thought about when Schaefer Cox's people were asking for everybody to help them. You can send money, that'll support the attorney, but for one man, can you take 20 men, travel them 800 or 1,000 miles to help up that one man? Perhaps you could, if the people around him started doing something, that others would come to their aid. But to think that that should initiate out of Illinois, for example, if Illinois can't stand for itself, why should, say, California go and help Illinois, take the place of Illinois people in making Illinois comply? Once Illinois starts the battle, then it's different. You know, once it started at Lexington and Concord, people from New Hampshire, New York, Massachusetts, or Connecticut and Rhode Island were on their way. But Illinois has to stand up first before other people should commit at all. It would be wrong for California to go out to Illinois, absent Illinois participating, and saying, hey, we got the right to come into your state and start shooting it up. You know, there's something wrong with that picture. But believe me, if Illinois picks up the banner on your behalf, I think you'll find support. But it has to be real. And we can go back to the Republic of Texas in 1996, I think. And those guys didn't do anything, so should people from other states go down and help them when they can't help themselves? So that dilemma is there. If you've got a strong unit there, they'll get support from elsewhere. But if your unit is weak, you can't expect people from other states to come and do their job for you. So it behooves you to get your committees of safety together and get your real capital M militias together so that you have an effective force that people can come and join and help you fight the battle.
Agreed.
Fair enough. I like how you worded that. That's why, yourself and whether Cross likes it or not, I'm obviously the younger of the group. Not saying that there's anything wrong with being my seniors, because I'm learning from you guys, but, I just appreciate you guys kind of mentoring me on all this, and, I'll still be the proverbial sponge and grasp what I can, and hopefully my power of recall retains what I need to retain, because I select to remember as much as I can, with including the committees of safety. But again, I just appreciate that you guys, continue to guide me with this, okay?
It behooves.
Well, your only obligation is to pass it on.
Fair enough.
Okay, thanks for calling, Brian.
Take care. All right, I want to kind of comment there for a second. The things that Gary does that I do that others do, we're actually, it's kind of for selfish reasons. I mean, it behooves us to help, to learn as much as we can, to present these ideas that we do. Because the more people that catch on and jump on board with it, the sooner we can begin to restore our country, which is our goal. That's it. It behooves us. We've kind of got a selfish agenda there. We want to be free ourselves. So it behooves us, it only benefits us to, share what we know and then get enough of you in educated enough in the things that we're presenting, so you can go out and then take it to everybody else, and you keep teaching. This is how it spreads. This is how it grows. This is how we get free.
Like a cancer. A cancer on the tyrannical government.
That's it. We have to become that, we literally have to become that you know, that cancer to these tyrants. You know, that's what they've become to us. They have infected our country. They have destroyed our cultural basis. They've destroyed our customs. They've destroyed our country. For all intents and purposes, they have destroyed our country. We have no manufacturing. We are uneducated. We do not even know our history. And this was all done intentionally. So that these things that we talk about on this show, you would not know already and would not have known, and your grandparents wouldn't know. So it's up to us now to make it happen again and take it back. It's yours to take or yours to give up.
Bender, you're right. If we don't come together and form defensive units. Any more questions, Cross? He kept suggesting that you have some questions.
Yeah, Cross, if you got questions or you got, well, I know you got, you've always got questions and you've always got answers as well, so if you got something to add, you can feel free to jump in here. I'm not sure what your guys' conversation was about. I mean, if it's in correlation with what we're discussing, yeah, you know, jump on in, unless it was something private or if it was, whatever else it was, then leave that outside. But, if anybody else has any questions, feel free to jump on Skype, just drop your name in the chat room. Or hit me up on Skype or Gary up on Skype and we'll bring you in. Other than that, let's talk about something else here. You know, the dissension and everything else, you know, the division, the name calling, the slander, the libel, that's all fine and well. We need that. You know, that's something that the Committee of Safety Common Law Court can handle and hopefully alleviate some of these problems. And if nothing else, say, you were right, you were wrong. And then the rest of the world knows. Then everybody else out there knows it. Let's talk about another aspect of this that the Committees of Safety actually used this for in the past, though. Activities that were inimical to the Committees of Safety and the communities. In other words, acting like a Tory, engaging with the Tories, infiltrators, being a traitor, whatever it was. If there was an individual in the community, let's say, that we had actual documented evidence that they were actually a state or a federal informant, paid informant or whatever, let's take those two individuals in, I don't know, in Alaska or any other case where, you know, we've been persecuted. Could we use this also as an outlet for that, to bring proof evidence of these Tory activities and present them like that, find out if they are actually factual and present them?
If somebody wants to file a complaint on that basis because they think fraudulent information is being foisted on the Patriot community, I think by all means it would be a good forum from that. Let's take an example that is fairly common in the Patriot community and has been for 30 or 40 years, the tax movement. I am a quote illegal tax end quote protester, but there are a lot of programs over the years that have been alleged to you pay the money, and some of them were quite expensive. Back in the 90s, they were $800. Some of them, you pay the money, we give you the forms. Some of them would defend you. They pulled a lot of the money that they brought in and had it there for your defense, but then you ended up in a federal court and the best they can do is try and defend you. But others just took your money, gave you a package and washed their hands. That type of organization, if they go to court, if somebody that's paid the fee and goes to court, or even the people who are the promoters of it go to court, they're going to a federal court, and there is no justice in the federal court. Bastiat, paraphrasing him, the definition of justice is the absence of injustice. There's so much injustice in this country that there is no justice in this country. And what we're trying to do is at least get a modicum of justice in the decision, not in the act, you know, in the enforcement of the decision, but in the decision itself, by having a forum where if you had bought a package and you paid your money and it didn't work and you lost your job and everything, then that would justify a complaint too, because there's a whole Patriot community and there's a lot of problems in it. There have been for 20 or 30 years, and how do we deal with them? Now, I'm going to find a letter, and I'm going to read it to you and give you an idea of how far back the government goes in trying to disrupt us. You want to take it for a minute while I find this?
Not a problem. Yeah. Something that Gary mentioned before, about these informants. I grew up in pretty bad areas, and people who get picked up for violating the law, for committing crimes, they get picked up and they get locked up. When you would see people getting arrested and then getting set scot-free and nothing really seems to be happening to them, those are the people that you really need to look at, because those are the people the government is using against you to infiltrate you, get stuff, make up stuff, plant stuff, whatever it is. They've done it in the past. It's documented that they have done this in the past, and nobody has been punished for this either. So, these informants, these disruptors, these provocateurs, they come from all walks of life. Schaefer Cox found out that, one of his command staff was one.
Was it two, wasn't it? Don't they have two informants up there?
There was two informants. One was part of the command staff. One was a supplier.
Oh, okay. Okay, I've got what I wanted to bring to your attention. It's dated February 26th. I'm sorry, it's 1973. That's 38 years ago. And it's dealing with it's the Western Regional Internal Revenue Service Western Regional Directors Meeting that was held in California. And here's the action items for district directors. This is what they wanted to start, make sure. Some had already applied this, but this is to get all the district directors in the Western region to start complying with these instructions. Number one, maintain the initiative in the attack on the tax rebels. Two, know their plans before they arrive at our door to execute them. Three, identify the leaders of the movement and concentrate on them. Four, have a plan of action in coordination with the region rather than hit and miss defensive reactions. Five, continue to step up the infiltration in depth of the movement. Six, use all federal, state, and local laws. Now, a lot of these people involved in promoting the tax schemes that, not call them schemes, the detaxing programs, have ended up in prison, but most of them have not ended up in prison over their IRS program. They've gotten charged with some other crime. Phil Marsh, who was a Larkin Rose, went to prison recently. People go to prison, but they're not charged with violating the tax laws. They get them on something else. So use all of available federal, state, and local laws, anything they can to put people in prison. Use civil, but now if they get you ready to go to prison and you sign a plea agreement, then you're back on the streets. And that's the informants amongst us that is probably the most prevalent. That's the one that was 60% of Richard Butler's church. Seven, use civil penalties in Porth cases. Way eight, wage a campaign to educate U.S. attorneys and federal judges with the importance of prison sentences on cases. So heck with justice, you want the judges to give them prison. Nine, district directors to continue follow-up cases of admitted or known false W-4s or W-4Es to advise employers of responsibility in such cases to follow up to see that the proper 1040s are filed at the filing season. Now, a lot of people manufacture their own W-4s and file them. I've always filled out the government ones. I just said I'm not a taxpayer. 10. Use state taxing agencies willing to cooperate in enforcement of laws on tax rebels. So they want to, they will fund the states to help go after you. 11. Los Angeles and San Francisco project supervisors to hold periodic planning meetings on common targets. So they joined forces in California to go after the people here. There's a couple more down here. Basically, what they're doing is they're saying infiltrate the movement, discredit the leadership, concentrate on the leadership. This is 38 years ago. Now, I'm sure the IRS has shared these ideas with the FBI, the BATF, and every other government agency that is charged with going after those that believe the Constitution is the founding document of this country. That being the case, their plan to infiltrate the movements, to concentrate on the leaders, to imprison people where they can, to do any form of intimidation, is a program that they actually put in writing 38 years ago. Now, for those that might question this letter, a guy named George Hansen back in the 90s, he was a representative, I think, from Idaho. He went to prison. He's one of the representatives that the House of Representatives turned against and cast him to the dogs. In the back of his book, and I think it's Sent Hither, Swarms of His Officers, something like that, or To Eke Out Our Substance, he took a phrase out of the definition or the Declaration of Independence for the title of his book. And in the back, in the appendix of that, you will see a copy of this letter that I just read portions of to you. I happened to be in Maryland when I was traveling around the country, and I made contact with one of his aides, and the aide gave me a copy of this letter. So I have somewhere around here a copy of the full size, but a reduced copy is in his book. So, you know, this is nothing new to the government. They've been doing it since the 30s. Since the 70s. It probably goes back to the 30s and the Prohibition days. So for us to think that they're naive and dumb is a mistake. To realize that they've got all the resources in the world, they've got money, they've got the leverage of threat of imprisonment, and they've got the dangling angle of apple of promotion to people. They've got all the tools they need to cause any infiltration in our movement that they want. Now, if we can spot these people by doing things that are anything that is disruptive. Now, let's go back to the tax movement. I wonder if some of these tax movement guys aren't trying to get people thrown in prison. There's a guy named Bannister. I have no idea what his program is. But he was ex-IRS, and he made it big in the Patriot community a few years back. I don't know if his program's legitimate or not. It's not what I do, but I don't pay income taxes and haven't since 1984. But when I read that his stuff years ago back in the 90s, I didn't like it. I didn't feel comfortable with it. And I don't know if anybody's gone to prison, but if somebody followed Bannister's program and ended up in prison or paying taxes and penalties because the program didn't work, they should bring a complaint. This doesn't mean the guy's guilty of anything. It says that what information you have believes that this guy might not have the same interest that we do.
Exactly.
And if he doesn't have the same interest that we do, let's expose that and save the people the grief, whether it be imprisonment, penalty, and fines, or just aggravation, by outing these people and letting others know that this is what happens. Now, if his program's legitimate, then the jury should find the verdict in favor of the program. If they can prove that it works, if properly applied, and you just didn't read the directions, then everybody knows that it works if you read the directions properly, which is a boon, because the guy that didn't read the directions properly might go back and read them properly and realize that he doesn't have to pay income tax. So yes, any direction, anything that's disruptive to our community, that's going to get people thrown in prison or fined heavily, it's going to give them a tool to make them informants amongst us, should be gone after. And if you're wrong, it's not embarrassing. In fact, you owe it to the community if you believe that somebody might be doing something bad for the community to bring that matter forward and let it be weighed. And you'll be relieved to find out you were wrong, or you'll be relieved to find out you were right. I hope.
Hopefully. Where were we at? We've got about 17 minutes left. Wow, that 2 hours flew by. So where do you want to go from here, Gary? Did we cover everything that you wanted to go over? I've got a few questions myself. So if we've covered everything that we want to talk about with the common law court, and you don't have anything else to cover on that, I'd like to ask a few more questions about it.
I have one thing to say. So far during the course of this program, we have gotten 2 volunteers.
Okay, there you go.
We have 18 people in the chat room, plus Randy and I and Dave. That's 15 people. When you guys get off the chat, I hope you're going to go to the URLs that I'm going to post again so that you can go volunteer to help us make this court work. Okay, Randy, your show.
All right. So we talked about then, in a couple of other ways, people that might actually be informants amongst us, or those who are presenting ideas that are actually harming people, even if it was benevolence upon their part, you know, they just didn't research it well enough. So we should, you know, we can use the court to bring those things to light. What about organizations themselves? You know, let's say that there's organizations out there whose purposes are inimical to our cause, but present themselves as patriot organizations. You know, can we use them for them for that as well? I mean, if somebody, let's say somebody creates a United States militia organization.
Let me use 2 that are commonly known, and I mentioned 1 earlier, and 1 was alluded to in a recent conversation.
Okay.
There are two organizations that there's a question about right now. One is the Constitutional Convention of 2009, whatever they called it.
Correct.
Continental Congress. And the other one is the group called RAP, which started about, I guess, 2 years ago when they were going to have all the governors served, and that didn't work. And they're still out there, and they're pulling their resources together and redirecting their course. I don't know if they're legitimate or not. I know that I went to their page once, and I didn't agree with a lot of stuff, but I can't judge them.
Right.
But if somebody wanted to take either one of these and challenge them, and they were willing to answer, it would give us a forum to get answers to those questions. So, see, it can serve a very practical purpose. I'm sure that they would be glad for the opportunity to come on in a forum such as this and show that their program has potential and can work.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, all it takes is one person to say, I would like to know if they're legitimate or not, if it can work. So that person that has enough belief and desire to find out the truth about the organization doesn't have to hate them, doesn't have to disagree. In fact, he could even be a member of that organization and bring the challenge so that it could go into this forum, be weighed by the jury. And remember, all the trial will accept things that are superfluous. If somebody calls somebody a son of a bitch, it'll be in the trial record, but it'll be removed before the trial goes out in public. But if it's germane to the trial, it'll be public. So now you'll have a whole history of either of these organizations, what they believe and what they have to defend or back up what they claim.
Okay.
So, and like anybody, any other court, we'll take friends of the court. If you want to join in because you think this organization or this guy is bad, you can volunteer as a witness and submit what you believe too, and they can have people come in to support them as well. I mean, we want to be as absolutely fair as possible under the form that we're working in, and that's on the internet. And so the only thing that I can think of that I felt bad about doing was closing the trial so that excerpts aren't taken out of context and being used to propagate the problem rather than solve it. So next question.
Let me finish this up real quick. Okay. All right, so we handled the organization aspect. We handled the informants or infiltrators amongst us. So what else do we go over? We covered the... Well, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, those are the areas that I had questions about because, you know, there's all these organizations and groups out there, and everybody, you know, They always say that they're out there supporting the militia, you know, or not the militia, the patriots, the America, this and that. And yet by their very actions, they don't ever seem to do that. They keep taking money, but nobody ever seems to get any benefit for the money given. They've raised millions and millions, but nothing was ever done. And I think that, you know, we could actually use it to start addressing some of these people. You know, I think that we have a lot of issues out there, and I think that we don't need the distraction of more and more organizations that are just draining the much-needed money of American people today for their own pocketbooks.
Now, if you've got any doubts about anything, it warrants bringing it up. But let me explain that if you may bring charges against the Federal Bureau of Investigation, I can assure you they're not going to answer
it. Yeah, of course, of course.
But if you have doubts about anything, you're not a bad guy for bringing the question up. You're helping everybody. Everybody that comes to the forum and reads the case after it's done, the verdict, is going to benefit because you had a question and you had enough balls on the male part, guts on the female part, to come up and say, I think we need to find out about this.
I do. I think
so. First, we need.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
First, we need the volunteers, and next, we need the complaints. Okay.
No, I think you're right. There is so much out there that this could help with. And it wouldn't be the opinion of one or two people. It would be, if somebody was found guilty of certain charges, it would have gone through a grand jury process. It would have gone through a trial process. It would have gone through the juries and the judges. And all of these groups they had all said, yes, there is merit to this. And then they would have said, yes, there is evidence of this. So then we could use it to clear up so many different issues out there and move on and start getting back to what is important, restoring our constitutional government.
So the opportunity is there. Now, after the show tonight, everybody's going to go back and do it, and it looks like some of them are going to go volunteer, but everybody's going to go back to doing what they do all the time. But this show tonight, of all the shows that I've done with Randy, the Committee of Safety is very significant. This one, though, has probably the greatest immediate return of anything that I can think of in the Patriot community. There have been so many pissing contests going on in the last few months that it's unbelievable. It's far worse than it was in the 90s, but then there's a lot more people playing the pissing game. But if you think of how disruptive it is, if you look at the organizations that are trying to damn the other organization, and some organizations will let you damn them on their organization, and other organizations won't let you damn them on their organization. But where's a forum that's fair for everybody? And who is going to benefit immediately by exposing the bad guys? So of all the things that you can think of, your training is for when the shooting starts. Everything you're doing is for something down the road waiting for SHTF day. But this can have immediate return, immediate benefit to all of us. So it's something that you ought to not just park in the back of your mind thinking, I'll do something someday. Tell people about it. So give them the URLs to the page so they can understand it. Encourage them to volunteer. Encourage them to think if they have a complaint to start putting it together. And if they contact the clerk of the court and want some help to put the complaint together, they will get all the help that the grand jury or the judges can offer in helping them formulate the complaint. I didn't say it in what I wrote there, but believe me, most people have no idea how to develop a complaint. I tried to give a list of what to say. You give that information, the grand jury can look at it and say, we need more, or this is fine. They'll work with you in preparing the indictment that will go to the accused. So if you want immediate return, if you want to see something really happen for the first time since you've been involved in the Patriot community, except maybe getting a group of guys together with guns, this has the potential for doing it. I can't stress it enough. We can see results within a month or two. And as the idea picks up, it'll be utilized more and more and more. And we might be able to pull a lot of weeds out of our garden.
Well, you're very right there. And in fact, you know what, Gary, you bring up an excellent point there. Why have, out of everything that we've done, all of our efforts that we've ever engaged in, besides our own individual efforts, yes, if you go out there and you practice shooting, you're going to see results. But out of all of our movements, out of all of our organizations, our groups, what results have we ever seen? What have we ever done that has actually given us strong, solid results that actually solve problems and let us progress to the next step? I can think of very few. And I've been around for a while. Gary's been around longer. I don't know how many of you seen Gary. You know, we could actually see results from this.
How many? I've seen some people manage to avoid in Texas, very few. I've seen more people, I think, go to prison as a consequence of it. Hitting the target, that proficiency still is of no benefit to you until you have a real target to hit. So even though you do gain something out of it, there's nothing manifest. There's nothing that is a step in the right direction. But just think about it. If we can clean 10 to 60% of the people out of the Patriot community that are creating the problems, get rid of the programs that tie people up in court, take them away from their families, cause divorces, take money out of their bank account. If we can get rid of those problems and get some cohesion in the Patriot community around the common law court, there's no telling what power, what force that will be against the government.
True.
So it's up to you again. This is one that is not hard to volunteer for. It won't take a lot of your time. If you were on a jury, I would estimate that you could possibly spend an hour a day, maybe two a day, but you could also put it off for a while. There's nothing urgent about a trial in this case. There can't be, because all the juries have to think things out. They've got to deliberate. They've got to talk among themselves, sort things out. So a jury could be out for weeks or months before they're finally satisfied. The jurors will be allowed to ask questions of the accused and the accuser as well, which used to happen in court. But now if they have questions and the judge doesn't want to ask it, the judge ain't going to ask it. So we're trying to be more open with this. So your participation, the grand jurors will be help prepare the indictments. They should have a little bit of experience or have studied to some degree or have an idea of how the law works. But they have to get rid of the old concepts of the current grand juries and understand that the grand juries themselves were totally independent and had the ability to do an investigation themselves. The judges should have a little experience in the law, but not the rules of the court, because the rules of the court are minimal. They're not to keep evidence out. They're to make sure that everything is allowed to be heard at the trial that should be heard at the trial. So it's more to keep evidence in than to keep evidence out. And they should have some degree of experience with the law, but it doesn't mean that you have to, because if you want to be a grand juror or a judge and you just have the motivation, the incentive to get involved on that level, join it, become one of them, and learn, because there will be some people with experience, but your insight being out of the current system might be more beneficial than what they learned working within the existing system. So your desire is sufficient knowledge to participate as a grand juror or as a judge. So there's no reason for anybody. It's just, you know, some people like strawberries, some like chocolate. Same thing here. Which one would you feel that you'd like to participate in? That's what you need to think of when you decide what you're going to volunteer for. Not what you think you're qualified to, but what you think you can best serve in. If you think that you can help keep the decorum of the court, work with two other judges during a trial to make sure that everything is fair, we're not going to leave it to one judge to decide what's fair or not. We're going to leave it to three judges, and two of them is a majority. If you want to be on the grand jury to see if there's enough evidence and help write the indictments to break down all these claims into specific charges, and you think you'd like to do that, then you're going to be serving on the grand jury for 6 months, but it won't be a busy thing. Well, it might be. You know, if it gets busy enough, we'll have two or three grand juries running at the same time, so that your time, again, would be probably limited to an hour a night, 4 or 5 nights a week, maybe, at most. But then there's no hurry on that, because until the indictment's out, there's nothing there. So it's not going to be tying up your time, keeping you up night sweating and worrying. You're going to simply be participating at the rate that you can, as long as it's not dragging rate, to help assure that the Patriot community has a form of outing the people that are bad for the Patriot community.
And I agree completely. So, you know, get on board. Volunteer. I already have. Apparently a couple of others have already volunteered as well. Good for you guys, and thank you. Well, that's pretty much it, Gary. We're towards the end of the show. I've got a couple of announcements I want to make, or I've got a couple of things I want to go over real quick before we close out. Is there anything else that you have left to say?
No, it's still only two, but I hope the numbers are going to jump up after within 15 minutes after the show's over. So, Randy, you take it now.
All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for coming on and listening. You know, I don't market the show anymore, and the listening base has been growing, so... You know, people out there have been telling each other about the show, and our downloads are growing and growing more and more every day. So I want to thank you all for that. I want to thank you all also. Almost everybody I see that has come into this chat room, the vast majority of them, you guys are truly the thinkers and the doers out there. The conversations that I've seen, the discussions that are going on. You guys are truly the thinkers and the doers out there. When we need more of you out there. So help spread this around. Thank you for participating. Thank you for sharing your ideas. You know, we need to get some of these things going and active. Some of you belong to the militia, and that's your role, and that's great. Other of you need to be looking at what we can do to get these committees of safety going, because that's our first and foremost step here. That is the only thing that kept us from becoming the France during, you know, becoming just like France during their revolution. This is not a joke anymore. We are in dire times. And because we were in dire times, I would recommend that you go back, and if you haven't listened to the old archives, go back and listen to all the old archives. I do not do garbage shows. Every show that we do, we present something that is vital. We discuss important concepts. And also, very importantly, go back and download the old Committee of Safety archives, as well as the Resistance to Tyranny archives with Joseph P. Martino. At the top of the website, there's a link in big yellow letters, Resistance to Tyranny. Check out his book. You can find his book on Amazon. I don't have a link to the Amazon site. I didn't want anybody thinking I'm getting paid for this or there's a commercial interest here. I promote his book because I think it's vital. I think that book is... that I now have a top 11 list of books to read. Joe Martino's book is on that. I think that every militia member out there should own that book. Every Committee of Safety should have multiple copies. It should be read, it should be handed around, it should be given out for people to read. So get your hands on it, read it, analyze it, study it. Go back and look at the plan. Compare the plan with what you see there. Note for note, compare it, you will see. And actually, Gary was working on the plan before we had Joseph Martino on the show. So you can see how great minds think alike. Become active, get involved, do something. Not online, but actually in the community, in your streets, in your home. And not just prepping for yourself. If we intend on barricading ourselves in our homes and making our last stand, that's all it's going to be, is a bunch of Custer's last stands. Look at Katrina. Look at the Gestapo. Look at what they did when people were divided and ununited, when nobody worked together, when nobody stood together, when nobody was engaging in a plan. Look at what they did. So start getting it together, people. It's only going to happen with if everybody here starts, you know, putting in 100% every day. You know, try to get in a couple of hours a day into actually something that is productive. You know, and focus on one or two things if you have to really get them going along. But do something productive every day. And if your job schedule just doesn't allow it, you're a fireman, for instance. you know, besides preaching to the guys that are there in your firehouse, you know, do it on the days that you have off then. But do something as often as you can. Get involved.
This, yeah, couple quick comments. Bender, you need to say what you're volunteering for. Fox and Bender, both, when you get a chance, go to the forum and register there so you're registered there as well, because that's where things will start happening.
That's it.
And thanks for volunteering.
So, yeah, get involved. This idea here, this only grows with you guys. So, common law, you know, the common law court, it's only going to grow if there's participation, so get involved. And that's it. Tomorrow, we are going to have on a longtime listener, hasn't really been into the live shows. He's always listened from the firehouse. He's the medic for one of the Silent Sons of Washington units. I believe it's the 42nd. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize if I'm wrong. I've had a busy last couple of weeks with the father-in-law being in town. We're going to have a really good show. We're going to be talking about dying with a belly full of freeze-dried food, Northwest weather conditions, and how to stay healthy and how to stay operational. Keyword being operational during extended patrols, during extended operations. We're going to be discussing quite a few subjects. We might even get into an attempted infiltration that went on up there, if time allows, or depending on where the show goes. So that is this Monday. Next Sunday, we are starting our very first monthly appearance on the United We Strike Marathon. This Sunday, this coming Sunday, we're going to have Joe Martino on again. He's also going to be a monthly guest on our show from now on as well. He'll be coming on once a month, so we're going to start with him there, and that'll be this Sunday. We'll be doing Resistance to Tyranny Part 4, and that's going to be a global broadcast. Apparently, there's hosts from all over the world on this thing. We've been on it a couple times, but from here on out, it's going to be a monthly thing on the 15th to 17th of each month. Not sure which day we're going to fall on. So we've got some good shows coming up, the next couple of shows. Also, Fox is doing a new show on our broadcast as well. It's the Armory with Fox. That is on Saturdays, 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, same time as our show, except on Saturdays. If you'd like to get on that show, if you've got something to say, get in touch with him. So far, I think he's done a pretty good job. I think he's brought in some decent, some good guests. He's talked about relevant topics. So, you know, just another voice out there preaching, you know, talking about committees, talking about what we need to be doing. We need more. So that's it. Everybody out there, be safe, be free. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.